Please listen carefully.
Hello and welcome to the Film Reviewer Podcast, episode number 25. This week brought to you by Audible. I'm your host, Zach Hamilton. Please take note that this is part two of my talk with special makeup effects legend Howard Berger. So if you missed part one, please check out episode 24. That being said, I do have a quick Revered Network reminder for you guys and gals. The Revered Network will be launching an all new podcast this Friday, June 22nd. The show is titled Music Revered Podcast and will feature interviews with musicians and other music industry professionals each week. This week's guest is Julia Ross. Julia is a vocalist and songwriter and has shared the stage and or studio with artists like Miley Cyrus, will.i.am, Lily Allen, The Chainsmokers, and more. Other upcoming guests on the show include Jeff Russo, who is the guitarist and co-songwriter for the band Tonic, the Verve Pipes frontman and original founder Brian Vander Ark, and Robin Wilson of The Gin Blossoms. For more information on these upcoming guests, be sure to check out reverednetwork.com. Lastly, along with the launch of the Music Revered podcast, the Revered Network has already launched the Music Revered playlist exclusively on Spotify. This playlist features music from past and upcoming guests of the Music Revered podcast and is updated weekly. Be sure to check the Linked Up or reverednetwork.com for the link. Coming up next, I have the second half of my conversation with Howard Berger. Howard is an Oscar award-winning special makeup effects artist who has over 230 film and television credits and is known for his work on Predator, Chronicles of Narnia, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, Lone Survivor, and Deepwater Horizon. More recently, you can see his work on television shows such as The Orville and FX Network's Legion. That being said, please stay tuned as we will now be taking a quick commercial break. Alright guys and gals, are you like me and want something more than music to listen to during your morning commute? Maybe you want to start reading more, but don't have the time to sit down and open a book. Well, for people on the go, there's Audible. Audible offers over 180,000 audiobooks to listen to on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, Audible is giving Film Revere podcast listeners a slammin' deal. Go to audibletrial.com/frpodcast for a free 30-day trial, and more importantly, get a free audiobook. Once again, go to audibletrial.com/frpodcast. That's audibletrial.com/frpodcast. Thanks again to Audible for their support, and thank you, listeners. Now, back to the show. Welcome back to the show. In part two of my talk with Howard, we dive into his more recent work with The Orville and FX Network's Legion. Howard also takes time to answer some fan questions and give us a heads up on what's to come in the near future for KMB EFX. And with that, let's get back into the conversation. So I'd love to kind of move on to some of your recent work. Again, kind of touching on Seth MacFarlane's new show, The Orville.
Yeah.
How did you come to be involved in with that show?
I worked with Seth on TED 2. I was makeup department head on that show. I got hired because I work a lot with Mark Wahlberg. And so Mark said, you know, you want to do TED 2 with me? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I love the first one. So that's how I met Seth. But it really was interesting. It really wasn't Seth who gave me a call. It was his producer, Jason Clark, who gave me a call. And Jason remembered, like, oh, Howard did all, you know, we had this big Comic-Con scene. And Howard did all this amazing stuff, you know, for that scene, TED 2. And so he called me. I was on Transformers 5, and he called me June of 2016 and said, listen, we're going to do this series, and Seth MacFarlane, and it's space, it's his version of Star Trek. So I got to read a couple of scripts, and I loved it. And I'm a big Seth MacFarlane fan anyhow. And we started talking and designing, and I ended up being on that show for a year and a half, from the point that we started designing at K&B to the point where we wrapped the season one. And it was an amazing opportunity. I was a department head, makeup department head. So I handled the entire department, which meant all the creature stuff, all the straight makeup, all the, you know, it was myself and Tammy Lane were, she was my key and I was the makeup department head. We came up with things that no other TV show would ever think about doing. And, you know, we were able to do it for a very reasonable cost and a time frame, and I really liked the script, and I really liked the cast, and I just thought it was something really awesome and inventive and new, and it was funny, but also it was it's heavy into science, and there were serious episodes, and I think that's what drew me. It wasn't the comedy, because I know Seth's funny, but I really liked the human drama aspect of it and the sci-fi aspect of it, and I thought that's what made it different. It would be easy to be a jokey, you know, elbow you in the side sort of show. That's easy. But Seth didn't want to go that route, and I really respected that. And I always said it's Star Trek with a sense of humor. It's not Galaxy Quest with, you know, sci-fi or what have you.
Yeah. So I guess that's the next question I'd love to kind of get your opinion on would be what's it been like with the fan reaction? Again, I know the show, kind of touching on what you mentioned, is that it's, you know, Star Trek with a sense of humor, which I feel like the critics initially were really hardcore against, you know, Orville, which really frustrated me, because again, I feel like it was just a misinterpretation of what they were going for with the show.
Oh, absolutely.
But then the fans were like, you guys are idiots. This is like the best show on television. So what's that been like dealing with that?
It was great. Because, you know, we were really excited, and then those first reviews came out, and I'm like, these people are all a bunch of assholes. Like, they don't get it. They don't get it at all. But then I'm looking at, you know, the reviewing Star Trek Discovery, and they love it, which I don't get at all. And and I'm like, that show isn't Star Trek to me. It just does, there's something about it that isn't right. But it was nice because there was a reporter from Forbes who rewrote his review and said, I'm wrong, and this is my new review, and I think this show is badass, and you guys are all out to lunch. I don't know what you guys are expecting, but this show's great. And now the fans are like gone berserk. Like, I was wearing my Orville hat in a Starbucks, and someone said, oh my God, where did you get that? And I said, well, I worked on the show. You worked on the show. It's my favorite show, you know? And I got invited to the Seattle Film Conference or Portland, Oregon Film Conference. And the guy's like, by the way, I'm the biggest Orville fanatic. And I'm like, wow, this is really catching on. So, I mean, they just started shooting, not just, we're six episodes in of season two. And, you know, it's going along. We're on a hiatus right now for 5 weeks and then start up again. And, but I like the scripts a lot this season. I mean, I liked the scripts last season, but this season, I think the sci-fi is really tight. You know, I really dig it. I really dig it. And it's been great. Seth is a great collaborator. He knows what he wants. He can give me, we speak a similar language because we're both nerds and squids. So he can say something and I'm like, okay, I know exactly what he's talking about. And we have a similar thing like that with Frank Darabont. You know, Greg has a shorthand, you know, we have with directors like that, and they can go make it more, you know, a Day of the Triffids, and we're like, and meanwhile, everyone is sitting at the table scratching their head, like, what is that?
And they're like writing it down, like, I wrote it down, but I don't know what it means.
And then Greg's like, I know what you want, you know. So, and that's what's great. We have a shorthand with all these guys, and Seth, I have a shorthand with him, and he can just go, Howard, I'm thinking like it should be more like blah, blah, blah. And he'll do me a little sketch, which, by the way, I save every little sketch he does. And I go, okay, I know exactly what you want. And then I do it. And he's like, dude, that's way better than I ever thought. So, I mean, I've told this story a couple times, or probably more than a couple times. But on the first day we tested things, we had like five or six characters to test. And it was for the pilot. So Jon Favreau was there as well. And I made up all these people. And Seth comes on set. And he's like, dude, what is going on here? I'm like, what? He's like, I'm looking at this stuff and it's better than I ever thought it would be. And can we do this every week? And I said, no, we're going to do this every day. And he's like, Howard, I just thought we were going to do forehead and noses like Star Trek. And I went,
yeah,
I said, this ain't Star Trek, pal.
Oh my gosh.
And I said, no, we're going big. Every day is big, big, big. He's like, I can't even, I'm out of my mind. And even, you know, Favreau is a great, great person to deal with. I love Jon Favreau. And he was really involved with the pilot and really, you know, great comments. And again, a geek as well. And we all speak the same language. You know, Jon could say this, you know, one word, you know, and I'm like, yep, I got it. I know what you're talking about, you know. So
it's, well, and that's key.
It is.
I love what you're touching on, though, is like you are exceeding the expectations so beyond what, you know, the original creator thought was even going to be possible. But I feel like that's something that KMB Effects Group has just become synonymous with. Again, you watch, going back to Greg with the whole Walking Dead series, the stuff that he's doing, you just typically you're not expecting to see that on a television show.
No.
You know, like not like every day to be able to do all that stuff is insane. So I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, again, KMB, it kind of speaks to why KMB Effects Group is the premier studio, because you guys are able to do that.
Well, we always want to look outside the box and stretch our imagination. And that also comes from, we have really great designers. You know, we can plant seeds, and then we watch these five guys in the design room, you know, grow different things from these seeds, you know, and it's always a constant flow of trying to be as original as we can be and as enthusiastic. And I think that's really it. There's like the guys that work at the shop for us love doing this. And and we only want people that are enthusiastic and want to be a part of it and be part of the team and have fun. It's supposed to be fun. And those that don't usually don't end up staying there very long, you know, and that's all cool. You know, people got to do what they got to do. But we've been very lucky having some of the guys that work for us have been there as long as K&B's been around. You know, we've had guys there that are rounding like 25 years, you know, working solid for us. And you know, it's because we trust them, we like them, and they do a great job, and they always have. And we always push the envelope. We're always pushing the envelope, trying to like, come on, we can make this better, you know? And it's
exactly.
And we do our very best. I mean, you also have to remember we're at the mercy of production. So
yep.
And it's getting a little more hard. It's getting harder and harder these days with production, because the way production deals with things and money limitations and time constraints, and, you know, 17 people have to make a decision about a fingernail. Those sort of things drive you a little nuts. But it's great when you're on a show like Orville, where it's a singular voice, you know, or Greg is, you know, calling the shots for the most part on Walking Dead. And it's great. I mean, you know, it's great to have collaborators, but it's also good to have like, so what am I doing? And one guy tells you, opposed to 27 guys sitting in chairs on their cell phones telling you their 2 cents.
And the trust is there that they're going to allow you to be able to do this, because without it, you wouldn't probably be able to go outside the box as often, because everything's being nitpicked apart.
Yeah, it is. And that's how you feel. Sometimes you get like, I really feel deflated sometimes, which is really, really disappointing. You know, I mean, it's like, guys, I'm an artist. I'm trying to create. I get it. I'm also a business guy. And that's that's the other thing, too, that K&B or Greg and I especially have over so many people, is that when you hire, like, you hire makeup people, but that's what they are. They're makeup people. They don't own businesses. They don't, but they don't always understand the business aspect of the business, you know? So I always go and I go, guys, I'm not stupid. This is how we're going to do it. This is what's going to be most cost effective for you guys. And we know how to juggle money. We know how to, you know, put the money where it needs to be and what's important and what's not important and where to put our efforts. And I think production really, really likes that. And especially,
I would imagine,
in the past 5 years, I've taken this role on of being makeup department head, which is unusual because makeup effects guys don't do that. I'd say there's a handful of us that do. I'd say Joel Harlow, Bill Corso, Christian Tinsley, myself and Greg are probably the only people that will department head entire shows. And, you know, because when I work with Mark Wahlberg, I'll be Mark's personal. I'll department head all the straight makeup, and I'll handle all the makeup effects stuff. So they're getting three people in one. And which, of course, is a huge savings, which they love.
Oh, yeah.
But it's something new that I do, and I really, really like it. I like that I'm in charge of it all, and that I don't have to deal with any, you know, extraneous bullshit from, you know, another department head or something like that.
So exactly.
It's really nice.
You know, another show I'd love to touch on was your work with the hit FX series Legion, which has just been blowing up. What would you say has been the most challenging aspect about working on that show, and what's been the most exciting?
It's interesting. I got a call. I was still on Orville, and I got a call to come in. My friend John Cameron, who's a producer and director on the show, John grew up with Sam Raimi. And so John was Sam's AD in his backyard. when he was making his movies. And then I worked with John on Army of Darkness. He was Sam's first AD on Army of Darkness. And John moved on and worked with the Coen brothers and da 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 and moved up this ladder. And I just look at Cameron like, to me, everybody is the same, or I hope they're the same as when I first met them, you know?
Yeah.
Like I know I've changed, but I still feel like I'm that kid living in my bedroom making masks. And I look at like, you know, whenever I see somebody like John Cameron, who's now a big, you know, producer, I'm like, to me, he's still that guy yelling on the set, you know, more deadites, you know? But anyhow, I went in and I met with John and Noah, who is the show's creator, and listened. And I had not seen season one, but I was sort of familiar. I knew some stuff about it.
Yeah.
And I read the scripts and I'm like, I didn't understand one thing. And I read all 13 episodes. I don't know what's going on, but all I know is there's some cool stuff. And Noah has a vision. But nobody knows what that vision is until it all comes together. And so we do all this crazy shit. Like we do this Minotaur, this like sickly Minotaur character, which is real. And Noah really was like, I came with a bunch of reference and some drawings. And one of the references I had was the Minotaur from Terry Gilliam's Time Bandits.
Oh my gosh.
It has like this skull and all this stuff. And I'm like, I always liked that Minotaur. And Noah goes, you know what? There's something here. There's something about that I like. Let me think about it. So then like 2 days later, he called me and he's like, well, what if – because we always think Minotaurs are these massive, strong guys. Howard, you've done a bunch of Minotaurs for the Narnia films. What about if it was like a sickly, paraplegic – you know, he's like in one of those like wheelbarrow things to get himself around. And I went, that's fucking whacked. Let me figure it out. So we designed it and I showed it to Noah and he's like, yeah, man, that's it. And Noah's a man of very few words. Like actually I've said more like paraphrasing, which Noah maybe says three words but they're very meaningful words. That's what's amazing. This is a guy that chooses his words carefully and wisely. And it was hard for me to get things out, but I had to find the hardest thing was understanding his language. That's what took me a while because I wasn't always hitting it. And he would say something like these characters, the Vermilion. And I'm like, what are they? And originally then they weren't on my plate. They were going to be a VFX thing. And then I'm like, okay, it's off my plate. I don't have to worry about it. And that was like 8 weeks in the prep. So then 2 weeks before we start shooting, I get called in and Noah's like, yeah, I'm not going to do those visual effects. I want to do this practical. And I'm like, oh, I got 2 weeks. I said, well, what are they? I don't know. I just keep thinking about Dennis Franz, you know, Dennis Franz, the actor from NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
And I went, okay. So like what? I don't know. Like maybe they look like him. And I went, all right. Okay. Let me think about this. So we went into designs and we had a test day. It's the first day of shooting. And we did all these silicone makeups on these girls, beautiful girls, you know, and model bodies. And they have these kind of Dennis Franz faces and Sonny Bono wigs and mustaches and Noah's looking at him. Doesn't say anything. He's looking at the costumes and walks away. And I'm like, okay, does he like it or not? And everyone's kind of scrambling. The producer's like, well, we're trying to find out what Noah thinks. And
oh my God.
And I'm like, okay. And meanwhile, we go and I'm like, well, they're getting called to set. So I'm going to go to set now with these guys. And we had done them. Originally they were supposed to be, look like Dennis Franz. I mean, have the bad skin and broken up capillaries. And so we painted them that way, you know, made them up that way. And then after we shot the first day, Noah came to me. He's like, yeah, I know what? I think I want them to feel more airbrushed. And I said, okay, airbrushed. I said, are you thinking like the Vermilion then should be void of all texture? Like they're kind of mannequin-y like? And he's like, yeah, yeah. And then walked away and I went, okay, we better start sculpting something new.
Yeah, no kidding.
So literally the guy sculpted something in like 2 days, sculpted three different makeups. They were broken. And we did it in foam rubber because I didn't need the translucency anymore. And we just kind of figured it out and it worked. And Noah was like super, super happy with it. And that was the – plus the girls that play the Vermillion. We have one girl. Her name's Jelly, Jelly Bean. And she's our number one Vermillion. She's wonderful. And she just brought it to life. Like her, yeah. Everything about it, I'm like, she's the Vermillion, you know? So whenever we had featured Vermillion, she was always the featured Vermillion. So had another girl named Alexa, another girl named Brittany. And then, those three girls were our main, Vermillion. But then we had a revisit the, Devil with the Yellow Eyes. We redid him. This last episode that aired was, a bunch of the characters, especially, David, played by Dan Stevens, has all these age transformations. He's, you know, I think we did like 30 different makeups. And Todd McIntosh was the makeup department head on the show. And so we figured it all out. And, you know, the guys at the shop kicked ass. Dave Grasso and Andy Burkholz sculpted everything for that show. And it was crazy. It was insane. And that's the one episode that John Cameron ended up directing. But it was really, really hard. It was a lot of makeups on a lot of actors in a very limited amount of time. But the thing is, you know, with TV, which it took me a while to learn, like you can do an amazing thing and then you move on to the next scene or they move on to the next scene and that's it. And there's no mention of like, God, that was amazing. That was great. It's like, okay, got it. Let's move on to the next scene. Because you – unlike a movie, you have, you know, 10 pages to shoot a day. So like, you know, I bring these giant creatures to set for Orville and Seth's like, ah, yeah, great. All right, let's shoot. Okay, great. Let's move on to the next scene. Okay. And I was like, but this thing is, this is freaking awesome.
Do you realize what I have created?
Pretty much. I'm like, let's shoot this some more. You know, I'm like, Seth, we're done. Yeah, he's done.
Okay. Put him in the background, something. Yeah, give him more.
I kind of like that. And I'm like, wow, this is something I have to get used to. And it's the same thing with Legion was the same. I had to get used to, you know, like, great. Okay. Minotaur's done for the day. All right. Everybody good with them? Yeah. It's cool. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. Let's get 25 Vermillion up there. And then I'm like, wow, that's harsh.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have the time to like, you know, appreciate or to get the other shots. It sucks, unfortunately.
And I get it. It's all good. It's just my, you know what? I get so excited about it. And I'm like, Isn't this badass? You know, I'm selling it. I'm like, that thing is cool as shit, right? I'm like, yeah, it's great. Okay, great. Okay, let's break for lunch, everyone. I'm like, but let's look at it more. Let's talk
about it. But it's so badass.
This is badass. Let's take it down the street, you know?
But, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's well, you know, and I can kind of attest to that too. I mean, being in the visual effects world, you know, I've had the opportunity to work on both feature film and television, and it's immediately different, even in visual effects, where it's like with feature film, you have like the time to really finesse a shot. Whereas with television, it's like, all right, I need that in like 4 hours.
Oh yeah. It's crazy.
So it's a much more expedited timeline for sure.
Yeah. It's just taken me a while to get used to, because I never did TV, you know? I mean, we did television shows and I'd work a couple days here or there, but like being on Orville for the entire run was a real eye opener about how television works. And then I had 3 days off and I was on Legion. So it was ridiculous. I'm like, I just finished like a year and a half on this show and I only have 3 days off and now I'm going to start this crazy show. But so anyhow, to wrap it up about Legion. So then I start watching the show and I'm like, holy shit, this is great. Like all this stuff is coming together. Like, it's so great and I love it and I love the way it looks and the way this is a crazy show. It's really amazing. And I then started to understand all the wacky things that he had everybody do.
Yeah.
It was all in his head, you know, and he knew how it was going to work. None of us did. I read every script and I would put it down and go, I have no idea what that was about. I'm lost. I don't know what's going on. So, but Noah does. And I trust him. And, you know, it's people love the show and great people too. I mean, like, you know, Lauren Shuler Donner, who's the executive producer on it. She's super, super cool. And she's been around forever and she knows this universe. And it was, you know what, they're super, super nice people. We had really long hours, but the people were so enjoyable and so kind that I was like, it's fine. We were all good, you know, and I got to hire a bunch of my friends and we do the makeups, and then we'd sit on set and wait. You know, we would do, sometimes we'd do the Minotaur, who would be first up in the morning. So we'd be there at 4 a.m. We'd make, his Dirk Rogers, who works at K&B, plays the Minotaur.
And oh, wow.
We'd make Dirk up, full body prosthetics, everything, 2.5 hours, all hand-laid hair, everything. And he's on the call sheet, he's on set at 7 a.m. So waiting. And I keep going to set like, hey, are we going to get to the Minotaur? Yeah, next shot. 9 o'clock at night comes. I've been sitting in the room all day. I go in.
Oh, my God.
I go to the second AD, Pete Drass, and I go, hey, Pete. And I'm joking. Hey, want me to wrap the Minotaur? Yeah, let's go ahead and clean him up. And I'm like, I'm joking, dude. No. We should shoot him. It's like, we're not going to get to him. He was first on the call sheet.
Oh,
it's
my, like, gosh.
Like, yeah, stuff came up. And I'm like, all righty. I said, it's a good thing you guys are nice and I like you.
Yeah.
And I go upstairs.
Definitely makes that easier to stomach, for sure.
I go upstairs and go, hey, Dirk, we're going to clean you up. He's like, all right, that's what I'm here for. That's what they pay. I do whatever they want. I'm like, all righty. Yeah.
So before we end our talk, I have some fan questions that they'd love for me to ask you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the first one I have here was, have you ever made your own Halloween or Comic-Con getup?
Not Comic-Con getup, but yeah, I mean, Halloween is like, I mean, that's the greatest day of the year. You know, I think it should be a legal holiday where we all take off and work on our Halloween costumes. But
yes.
I mean, I've always made my own Halloween costumes. I haven't done Halloween. I mean, I was home last year and we went trick or treating. My wife and I went down the street and walked around, and we live up on a hill, so nobody comes up here, but we buy bags of candy and we go down and we hand out candy on the street to all the kids. Cause down in this one area on Stansbury Street, they block it off and it's like, you know, a mile of Halloweeners. So,
oh, that's awesome.
So we do that every year. And then, I used to do stuff, make my kids up, force them into costumes. And no, Halloween's my favorite thing. Matter of fact, I'll just tell you this quick story. So like I was said before we started that we're looking to buy a new house. And
yeah.
So we looked at this house today. And before we left, the realtor said, is there any questions? I said, yeah, what's the trick or treating like here? And he said, well, I don't know. He said, that's a strange question. I said, well, yeah, but it's important to me. And so he called the owner, and the owner said, oh, the whole place is crazy on Halloween. We throw parties. Everybody has an individual Halloween party in their house the weekend before Halloween, and it's just a giant rave. And I was like, I think I'm going to buy this house.
You're like sold immediately. Yeah, this is definitely for me.
Yeah, almost. I was like, okay, I'm in.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, another question here, which I'm actually interested in myself, would be, how has the growth and advancements in technology changed the makeup effects industry for you?
I think it's, you know, we've had a change because of the way the film industry's changed, especially dealing with digital, you know. It's really harsh. I miss film. I love film. I like the way film looks and the way makeup looks and costumes, and really all the departments have had to change the way they think. Costumes has to handle things different, set design, you know, set dressing, everything, lighting. It's crazy, you know, but when you get a good DP who knows how to shoot digitally, you have a little more confidence in it. I've had some bad DPs and I'm like, dude, you're lighting it like it's a bathroom. This looks like shit, you know? You can't just light the set and then bring actresses in, you know? And they look like crap. So that happens often, and you have to point that out. But I think on a technical aspect for us, like silicones, you know, the advent of silicone, which has been around for probably 20 years, you know, using it. But now we're doing a lot of 3D printing, which is really interesting. And it's not something I was like originally digging, but we have a couple printers that Greg purchased that we use at the shop. Mm. And there's things, it's not that we're printing makeups, but we're able to print things that we can utilize for mechanisms or pieces of suit. Like, actually, when you see these creatures we did for Captive State, that film that's coming out in August that Rupert White did, a majority of those suits are all 3D printed. They were designed on ZBrush by David Grasso, who works for us, and we had them output and cleaned them up and molded them. It would have taken us weeks and weeks and weeks to sculpt them. Instead, it took days to manufacture all those pieces, which was amazing, time saver and money saver. But it's really cool. And Greg has really been pushing the limit of people printing and printing. And if you go to Rick Baker's Instagram account, Rick is loving it. And he's just printing all this great stuff. And, you know, now that Rick Baker's retired, it's almost like he's reverted back to that cool, you know, 16-year-old in his garage working on something. Rick is making all this great stuff, and it's so inspiring, you know. And same with Chris Wayless, who did Gremlins and The Fly and so many other great movies. Chris is retired too, and he is just making these great things, like some of the best stuff he's ever done. I'm looking at it going, I love this stuff that Chris is doing. So it's kind of fun, like all these monster guys. I mean, we're always doing stuff. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That we never stop. Like, we go home and we think about monsters. We did it at, you know, the guys do this, I do that. I like to draw. My wife is an artist, so she inspires me to like start drawing in the evenings or do this or learn more ZBrush or learn more Photoshop or Illustrator or whatever.
And I love that.
It's really, really cool. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, we still do it the same way. We still, you know, there's a sculpture, there's a mold, there's foam rubber, there's silicone, there's, so that, in that respect, it hasn't changed. It's just for K&B, it's a bit more of a machine than it used to be. And we, you know, we just find different ways of doing things and being more creative and working within, again, like the money and time constraints are always a challenge. But, you know, it's cool. I mean, I think that's one of my, it's one of my big complaints I have about like this up and coming generation, you know. It's and it maybe not this generation, but the generation before. Like, again, I would work all day and go home and sculpt and mold make and whatever.
Yeah, continue.
And but then I started to see all these people coming out of schools going, only doing what they had to do as part of the curriculum, which is about 25 hours a week. And I didn't understand it. And I said, well, okay, let me look at your portfolio. And I'm like, okay, well, this is all the same shit that these 10 kids have that went to the same school. Well, show me what you did when you went home. Well, I don't do it at home. I said, why not? That's what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you're supposed to be passionate. You should be continuously doing something.
Exactly. And I just went, you guys are not, this isn't going to happen for you. I know that sounds like a dickhead thing to say, but you guys actually don't want to do this. What you're doing is you're wasting your parents' money for another 6 months going to a makeup school. So you don't, until you figure out what you want to do, but you guys don't have the passion. Like, you should be going home and making monsters all night long until you have to get some sleep and get up and go to school and do it again. And it just wasn't, it was really discouraging, but you know, now there's this generation is coming out is definitely way better, more invested, and sees what the competition is. And that's the thing too. I get asked a lot of questions. You know, people will say, like, you know, how do I get into this? And I'm, which is the question I hate more than anything. next to somebody walking in the shop and go, so you guys make monsters here? And I always go, no, we build refrigerators. So, but it's really a, you know, it's, you gotta be really passionate about it. You know, you gotta love it. Like, you do anything, you know, and I consider myself super, super lucky and fortunate that I would do a job. It's not even a job. I get to have a career that I love, and I love every aspect of it. And I love the people, and I wake up every morning, I'm super excited about it. We go to the shop. I mean, you know, Greg and I go to the shop when we're not on set, we're at K&B every day. Like, we don't not go to the shop, you know?
Yeah.
And people are like, well, why are you at the shop? And that's also, I've learned from other shop owners who are not in business anymore, that nobody cares more about your business than you. And you can have a great supervisor, great coordinators, but ultimately it's your neck on the line because it's your money and you're 100% responsible. So I started to see my competitors that not go to their shops and not be involved and not go to set. And that's the thing too. That's Greg and
it's
I.
So strange, well, in
is,
a way.
It is. To me, it's like the weirdest thing in the world. Like, that's the payoff. Go to set. Go to set is where all the magic comes together.
Yeah.
And I know guys that just don't go to set. And I'm like, why would you not go to set? I mean, those guys are now don't have shops. They're not, I don't even know what they're doing anymore, but they really, they got so big and so full of themselves that they lost sight of what we do and why we do it, you know, and But then there's us, like Greg and myself, who's been at it, you know, had this company for 30 years. I've been at this for 36 years. And there's a reason, because we love making monsters and we love movies. We're filmmakers, and it's every show, every new show is an adventure, and we love that.
Well, that is terrific. Yeah. And I mean, again, that's how it should be. I mean, the film industry in and of itself, you don't get into it. I know there are people that try to get into this for the fame or the money, but at the same time, it's like, I remember the first time I worked at a visual effects studio and I was just like, whoa, like it's not cliche. Like it genuinely is. It doesn't feel like work.
Right.
You know, like you go in and you're just like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, I don't like getting up early in the morning. But at the same time, once I'm there, it's like, and this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm gladly going to stay here, you know, till 4:30, order a pizza at 2:30 in the morning. No, and I'm not leaving till 5 in the morning. You know, like, and I've been there since 7, but it's like, it's totally fine because you love it.
Oh yeah.
And so I think it takes I think that's why those individuals, again, like yourself, you know, that continue to work even when they're not at work, it's like, cause you're passionate about it. That's why you're successful.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what I hope. So, but yeah, no, it's great. You know, yeah, I love it. I can't get enough of it. So, you know, every day is a great adventure for me.
Definitely. Well, thanks so much to Howard Berger for joining me on the show today. Again, you can see his latest work in the most recent seasons of The Orville and Legion, as well as the upcoming films Captive State and Mile 22, which both premiere in August. Thanks again, Howard. Seriously.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Well, that's the end of episode 25 of the Film Revere podcast. Please show your support for the FR podcast by leaving a review on iTunes, Google Play Music, or if you happen to listen to the show. It really helps us out. Be sure to follow the company's social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Revere Network to get all updates first. Another great way to show your support is by getting a free audiobook and 30-day free trial from Audible by going to audibletrial.com/FR podcast. Again, tune in this Friday to catch the premiere episode of the Music Revere podcast featuring an interview with vocalist and songwriter Julia Ross. Lastly, my guest for next week will be primetime Emmy Award-winning film and television composer Jeff Russo. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Film Revere podcast. Have a great week.